You're listening to the Art of Parenting podcast. I'm your host, Jeanne-Marie Pennell. Welcome and thank you for joining me. I created this podcast along with everything I do at yourparentingmentor.com to support and inspire you to be the best parent you can be. I know for a fact and from experience that parenting was never meant to be done alone. From conception to preschool, my mission is to give you the tools, strategies, and knowledge to embrace and elevate your parenting experience. I'm dedicated to supporting, inspiring, and guiding you to nurture your child's immense potential with as much joy and ease as humanly possible. Make sure to take time to check out all of the resources I have gathered for you in the show notes, as well as on my website, yourparentingmentor.com. And be sure to get on my email list so you do not miss a single episode and other products and events I curate specifically for you. And please do not hesitate to reach out if you have any questions, concerns, or feedback. A warm welcome to you and thanks for tuning in. Hello and welcome back to The Art of Parenting. This is your host, Jeanne-Marie Pennell, and today I am with the lovely Karina Kilcoyne, who will be talking about her personal stories, but we're going to go into really what it means to do some healing, right? Especially as we parent, we need to look at our own stories and heal. And I think this is a very important conversation for many. So Karina, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, I'm just thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
So as you know, Karina, I always love to start with this idea of having my guests define what the art of parenting means to them.
Yes, I would love to do that because it's interesting in relation to the book that I've written, which is called Rise Above the Story, Free Yourself from Past Trauma and Create the Life You Want. And I know that you like to start out with this question, and I think it's a really important one to ask, especially in relation to what I teach and what I like to talk about, which is this healing from past trauma. So I would say that to me, the art of parenting is taking this responsibility to cultivate a self-awareness around our own past trauma and the stories that we've written about ourselves because of what we've been through. And I think that so often, so many of us, in an effort to try to forget about what happened or heal ourselves from what happened, we don't process what happened or the emotions around it, and instead we stuff it or compartmentalize it and we go on with our life. And I did the same thing myself for decades, actually. And it wasn't until I went on a healing journey that I realized that my own mother had so many stories that she never really resolved. And so in a lot of what I write in my book, I really dive into my relationship with her. And it really got me thinking about this question you ask, which is the art of parenting. And I would say that it truly, to me, feels like it could be so empowering and powerful to have this even stronger relationship with your children when you cultivate the self-awareness around your previous pain and the stories you believe about yourself because of it.
Yes, and so true. I mean, to me, I think that's a important conversation to have. And when you say trauma, I like to also, you know, reiterate there's little t trauma and big t traumas. Like, it doesn't have to be major events and so forth, but there's just so much baggage that we carry that we need to heal from. So thank you for that. And so before we get too involved in our conversation, I'd love if you would share with our listeners a bit more about your background and how you came to do the work that you do and write this wonderful book that you've just published.
Oh, thank you. So I started my career as a criminal defense attorney, and I went on to practice a lot of trial work starting out, and then I also evolved into white-collar criminal defense. And I was just really hurting for a long time and racked with depression and anxiety. And there came a point in my life when I knew it was time for me to go on a healing journey. And there was so much about my young life so much I was ashamed of in my traumatic childhood and my traumatic early adult life that I really knew I needed to finally unearth instead of running from it. I needed to just finally process it. And so I went on a healing journey, and that's how I got to do this work that I do, which it took me years to go through that healing journey. And I was so overwhelmed. I didn't know where to start or how to begin healing. And I felt like I tried a lot of different types of therapies. I read every book I could about the science of your brain and what your brain does in the face of trauma. And I realized that when I got to this brighter spot, when I realized I got like over this bridge of, I saw things a different way, and I realized what I really wished I'd had was a guidebook to kind of lead me through this process. And so that's why I'm in this work and why I wrote this book, is because I wanted to create a guidebook for people to understand where they can start and how they can begin unearthing these old traumas. And I loved what you said about that. You said, you know, there's big T and there's little T trauma. And I would even go further to say that I think it's also based on how sensitive we are, right? How we come out of the womb. Do we, you know, what's our dopamine and our serotonin, and what happened to us? Like, it, there's so many things that go into who we come out of the womb as. And I just feel like there's a whole sensitivity also kind of just brewing inside of us about how we process bad things that happen to us. So I think that it's really important to focus in on that and understanding all those different aspects. And that's really why I did this, why I'm in the work I am now. And I've quit practicing law, because I really want to help people heal from their past traumas.
Beautiful, and such important work. Thank you for that. And I'm intrigued on just more as a personal note, just what does a healing journey look like? Like you said, you know, it took a long time, but did you, you know, you said you tried different types of therapy. What was something that, I guess, quote unquote, really worked for you or really helped you kind of understand your story? And like you say, you know, your book, Rise Above the Story, like what was that tipping point, I guess, that makes us realize like we are not our story? Because that's something that, you know, I repeat to myself, is like, it does not define you, what, you know, what's happened in your past or how somebody, you know, looks at you or shames you or whatever. It does not define who you are. But sometimes that's not, I mean, it's easier said than done in a way, right? Because we, mm-hmm. we internalize everything, and we go back to, you know, the little girl or the little boy in us that was shamed for something or such. So what was like that tipping point for me?
It got to the point where the pain of carrying it around was just too much to bear. And I was feeling as though I was living this half life. Like I was so disassociated. The ripple effects of my trauma led me to do several things. So professionally, I ran from where I came from. And I thought, spoiler alert, this didn't work, but I thought that if I chased success and if I checked all the boxes and I was successful and I won this trial and I had these kind of clients and I made this much money, that I would feel better. And after, you know, years of that and not feeling better and in fact feeling worse, feeling like an imposter in my career, no matter what I achieved. And then personally, all of that old unresolved pain and these stories I believed about myself. And my stories were like, you know, ones of abandonment and worthlessness and shame. And so personally, what that did was it put me smack dab in relationships where I was choosing friends and lovers and companions and even my husband out of some fear of being left, fear of being not included, fear of being alone. And so the tipping point for me was all of that, this culmination of this can't be what it's about. There's got to be more than this. And when I first set out to figure all of this out for myself, a couple things I learned early on really catapulted me into this journey of healing, which you talked about. And that's that 70% of us will experience trauma in our lifetime. That's from the National Council for Mental Wellbeing. And I have to sit here and tell you that if you asked me, I would say the number's probably higher, because there were people like me who for decades never reported my trauma to some statistic. So I'm thinking that as alarming as 70% sounds, I think it's probably even higher. And the other thing I learned early on was that I wasn't alone. I wasn't alone in my storytelling or my shame because of that statistic, but also because I learned what our brain does in the face of trauma. And that's it tries to keep you safe by writing these stories that keep you in a little box. They keep you in a small life. They're, don't say that. Somebody might not like it. Don't like that person. They won't love you back. Don't take that risk. Don't run down your dream. You'll fail. Those kinds of stories really impact us. And when I caught on that if something bad happens to you and you have a brain, chances are you're going to have a story. And so all of this made me realize that I wasn't alone, and I don't want other people to feel alone. And that was really the tipping point for me and why I continued on my healing journey.
Beautiful. Yes. And so for me, when you say, you know, that our brain keeps us safe, I'm reminded that not only do we tell ourselves stories, but then when we believe those stories, then we create these beliefs about ourselves. And it's just this vicious circle that we, you know, to get out of it. And so what, I guess, you know, quote unquote technique or protocol that you were able to use that was really profound for you? Because I know today there are so many modalities to, you know, really help people on their healing journeys, whether it's, you know, EMDR, hypnosis, I don't know, food, exercise, whatever it might be. What was the one that for you really helped you kind of break out of these stories that you were telling yourself?
You're so right. There are so many modalities these days. And again, that was one of the goals I had when writing this guidebook, is that I have an entire chapter on different modalities. And I talk about the ones that have merit, the ones that have been around, you know, that have some scientific studies behind them, that, you know, are just so around so long that they're just, you know, meditation and yoga, but then also, you know, other ones that you mentioned, like EMDR and somatic therapy and such. And I've tried so many different modalities. And what I want people to know is that traditional therapy is so beneficial. And I really got a lot out of traditional therapy, but I also, these other modalities really helped me unearth different parts of my pain. And this, I set out in this book to create this three-step process. And in doing so, I explain my process of what worked. And it does include these modalities, but it also included like the first step, which is acknowledging your story. There's so much self-awareness that needs to be created around who you really are, what you've been through, who you want to be. And there's so much self-awareness. And I talk a lot in the book about this idea of how do you get there? How do you shift out of your emotional brain, which is running these negative stories about you, into your more compassionate thinking brain, where you find judgment and reasoning and grace for yourself. So there's this whole first step for me that was so important about even acknowledging what had happened to me. And in a factual way, in a very factual, objective way of what happened to me in my childhood. And then also understanding the subjective nature of what I believed about myself because of it. And that was a big step. And then the second step is releasing the story. And that's just understanding, and this is a lot of deep work in this section, because it's understanding how you got so caught up in your story. For me, it was recurrent trauma, and it was, you know, it was parentification. I switched roles with my mother. And it was, there's also a lot of work to be done there, obviously, about, you know, your inner child and forgiveness, forgiving your parents or, you know, the perpetrator of the wrongs, and forgiving yourself. And then the third step is diving into, which was honestly for me one of the hardest parts, which was finding that unconditional self-love for myself. And that's really hard to do if you were raised without unconditional love, or if you weren't taught how to soothe yourself, if your self-esteem wasn't nurtured. And so that self-love, that unconditional self-love, it can be really challenging for a lot of us, but especially those of us who experienced early trauma.
Right. And when you say that, I have to ask, you know, for the parents listening who have children or are about to have children, what would be kind of your, I guess, what you wish you had had as a child, right? Because you say you did not receive that unconditional love. And we know that that is such an important foundation, you know, in the instance of birth and even through pregnancy. And then in those first few years, to give them that foundation of that they can trust the world, that they are wanted, that they are loved, and so forth. But if you haven't had that as a child yourself, so, you know, you kind of had to reparent yourself, it sounds like. And then what would be the advice that you would give to parents to be aware of maybe what they can do to prevent that for the next generation?
I would say I wish that my mother had more of this self-awareness that we're talking about. I wish she would have spent more time working on herself and loving herself and taking time away to heal those wounds. And I see this so often in life with you know, just people I know or culturally or societally. I feel like we are conditioned for the most part, most parents are this way, to give so much to our children. And I think a lot of times it is at the cost of even our own well-being. And I know that that is what's, you know, expected. But I also believe in this idea that you cannot show up in a relationship offering your most authentic self and the best of who you are as a human being to your child if you are not being honest and acknowledging what you're going through or what you're suppressing or what you haven't yet processed. It subconsciously manifests itself. And so this responsibility to not just show up with a happy face or give to the child because you're trying to make up for what you didn't have, but this real, this honest approach to, I want to understand who I am as a person, and I want to get clear, and I want to understand how to heal those old wounds, and I want to show up in this relationship with my child as my most authentic self and someone who is a beacon of light to, here is who I am in the world, and I'm proud of it.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And that, you know, like you said, that first step is that self-awareness. And I think, unfortunately, and I've seen it with, you know, the families that I work with, is sometimes becoming a parent kind of awakens some of these stories that we've kind of shoved in a drawer, you know, deep under a big mess, and that we haven't unraveled. And sometimes the child's need for our attention and all this will kind of trigger those. So it's true that it, I mean, I wish there was, you know, there's childbirth preparation and all this, but there needs to be more like self-awareness of parenting classes. It, you know, it sounds like what you're saying is to be really do that work before you become a parent, because it's true what you're saying about, you know, we cannot show up for other people, whether they're our children, our partners, our colleagues and such, if we're not taking good care of ourselves first and foremost.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So wonderful. So you kind of went through the three-step process that you mentioned. Anything else that you would like to add to that to maybe help somebody who's listening to us and going, okay, so that makes sense, but how do I really, you know, go through this other than, you know, probably getting your book, reading it, going through the exercises and everything, but anything that you'd like to maybe share for those listening to us?
Yes, I would agree that, you know, of course it's all laid out in the book, but this idea about uncovering those deeper parts to me is so crucial in any relationship. And I liked what you said that a little bit ago about that too, is like when you understand who you are and you have developed this deep sense of your authentic self and you are not carrying around shame, and you are not carrying around regret and guilt, but instead you have this light about what you want from life to be, and you have this expectation that good things are coming, you step into any relationship as a different person. I found that in my relationships, when I got to the other side of the majority of the healing I needed to do, I was choosing relationships because I wanted to be in them, not because I felt like I needed to be in them. And I think there's also this sense of, as a parent, and I know my mother did this too, was this sense of she was living through me. Like, it's almost like, well, it's too late for me, but you go ahead. And it created this rift in our relationship where it became this enormous responsibility on me to do all of these things that I felt like she wanted me to do because she felt unable to do them. There's so much of a subconscious undercurrent that goes on in a parent-child relationship. And I just really want to stress the awareness component and this idea of really stepping into your own personal development and your own personal power to heal yourself, because that's a big thing that I realized, and I wish I'd known it earlier, was that I had that power all along. I just was afraid to do it. And I think that when you're parenting, it's easy to be distracted away from your own personal narrative and your own personal work. And I think it's so crucial, especially out of, you know, love for yourself and love for your children, that you find a way to heal those deeper wounds so that you are offering to this relationship and to this generation, the next generation, this idea of there is more for us than just this pain we're carrying around.
Right, right. And when you say that, I think also of kind of generational traumas, right? Recently, I had a girlfriend share with me some pretty kind of traumatic, you know, she had been traumatized and then realized that her mother and her grandmother, and it had been passed on in this lineage without anybody ever talking about it. And really, you know, so how can we do that work with our own parent if we can, and then with ourselves before becoming a parent?
Yes. And well, I have to tell you, I had a similar situation in my family, you know, and a lot of my forgiveness towards my mother didn't come until after she died. Most of it, actually. She died when she was 44 and I was 24, and I adopted my 9-year-old brother, half brother. And it wasn't until I really got to be of a certain age that I could understand that my mother had her own story. And that was that her mother abandoned her when she was just a baby. She didn't have a relationship with her mother. Her father was an alcoholic. She was raised until she was 12 by her grandmother, who was Ukrainian and barely spoke English. And a lot of this was generational, I'm sure, not to talk about, to push down, to suppress, to not deal with the pain and the poverty and the trauma and the abandonment. But it was definitely this theme generation after generation in my family. And what I took from it later in life is I realized that at each generation, my people were definitely survivors. But what I wanted to do in this generation is I want to call to action that it's not enough for me anymore just to survive. I want to thrive. And that's, I think, too, what's such an important goal for everyone is this sense of you don't have to take it on the chin. I don't know. It's like there's this undercurrent of something going on where you don't have to, you just have to take it on the chin. This is the way life is and bad things happen and blah, blah, blah. But I'm of the opinion that that's not the case, that we have the right to unearth all of that and to process it and to understand that we are all here, all of us, to experience joy and happiness. And I look back generationally at my family and they didn't do that. And so that's a big thing for me. And what I want to get the message out to people is that we all should be expecting good things to come our way and have joy and happiness and to feel light. And I think that that's a big thing that we don't know enough, or we don't really believe in it. Instead, we kind of just accept what's handed to us and think, oh, that must be it for me. And that's not true.
Right. And at the same time, I can feel maybe, you know, some of my listeners being somewhat triggered, because I think there are just situations in our day-to-day life, whether it's economics, whether it's illness or things like that, that make it that it can't always be so joyful. And I hear you. I mean, I agree with you that we need to expect the joy and the goodness and all of this, and that the universe has our back, as we say, and that it is benevolent and good. But yet, especially today, I mean, we're in 2024, and I don't know. I mean, the world is just shit and falling apart. Excuse my language, but it's just there's just so many hardships. So how do you rise above that when it is, you know, so much in our face?
Yeah, I know. It's challenging for sure. And I will tell you that I am not somebody that sits around like, oh, it's rainbows and unicorns all day long. And I feel like I have made it where happiness is not a destination that I'm always trying to get to. It's more of a, I feel it in the moment and I try to create it. And usually it's around some sense of gratitude. So it's around some sense of gratitude. It's around some sense of accomplishment. It's around some sense of celebrating wins that I have individually or I have as a family. And sometimes a win is, you know, we made it to the park today. We all ran around or laid in the grass or, right? It doesn't have to be some big monumental thing that happens. But I think creating these moments where you can still feel joyful is the goal. And it's not so much that, oh, I'm all this bad stuff's happening, so there's no way I'm ever going to be happy. It's not that. It's that in the face of it, in the depths of it, how do you still find moments where you can feel joyful and happy and some sense of gratitude? And I know depending on the situation, that's really challenging. And it's one of the things I write a lot about in the last section of the book, which is this idea that there's always going to be quote unquote setbacks. And you can look at them as setbacks, or you can look at them as opportunities to fuel other growth. And in fact, I was talking about this with somebody the other day, and she said, oh, I don't look at them as setbacks. I look at them as God winks.
At God winks?
Yeah, as God winks, like God's winking at me. Yeah, like, oh, that's pretty interesting to look at it like that. So I don't know. I just think that there's, you know, there's shifts that we can make mentally and emotionally around, as you say, the shit that is going on in the world these days.
Yeah. And I like what you're saying, because it reminds me that, you know, and I always say this, that life is a choice. So the situation in front of you, you can look at it, you know, like it's horrible and all of this, or like you're, you know, the person you were talking to, you can say it's a wink from God, or it's an opportunity for growth. So it's really every moment of every day, I think we get to choose whether we want to step into that joy, into taking care of ourselves, into looking ourselves in the mirror and saying you're a kick ass, or look at ourselves in the mirror and say, oh, you look like shit. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's every time, I think, is that opportunity is what I'm sensing you're saying as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Wonderful.
And I do love that idea. And I have that in the book too. That was a big part of my journey into self-love, was this looking in the mirror and what do you say to yourself in the mirror? And that was really hard for me to do that at first, to look in the mirror and say nice things, but it's so important. And I love that exercise of doing that every day and making that part of your morning ritual, or at night before you go to bed and you're brushing your teeth, like whatever it is, that idea of looking in the mirror, because the eye contact to me was so powerful, and saying these things until you believe them. And that's also something I do almost, well, pretty much every day around some emotion I'm having. As you know, I'm a big believer in this honoring your emotions. so many of us don't do that. And even as a parent, it's hard, you know, like things are blowing up and kids are crying and blah, blah, blah. It's like this moment of just taking a few seconds to honor yourself and how you're feeling in the moment. And I have a thing I say to myself, which is, even though I'm having all this fear, I love and accept myself. Even though I have all this anxiety, I love and accept myself. Even though I'm so pissed off right now, I love and accept myself. Because this powerful notion of honoring your emotions and feeling them in real time goes a long way in our mental and emotional well-being.
And I love what you're saying also, because it doesn't sound like it's judgment. It's just accepting. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, like, for example, for myself yesterday, I had, I don't know, at the end of the day, it didn't feel like it was a good day. And I was like, okay, well, that's, you know, that's okay. It is what it is. You know, I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. Tomorrow's another day and that's okay. And I'm, you know, going to go take a hot bath and go to bed and everything will be fine. But sometimes, you know, I think a younger self might have judged myself for not having been as productive or this or that, and that, you know, I'm a loser, whatever. And here it's more like, okay, well, it was just one of those days and that's okay. It doesn't define who I am.
Right. And I love that, because that is so true. There's so much I think even I can envision the parents out there listening. There's so much about got to get it done, got to check a box, got to be here, got this drop off. Like there's so much to do, right? And it just feels like if it doesn't all go in sync, then something's wrong. Like I could have done it better. I could have done it different. And I'm all about that, the grace we can offer ourselves, because the world's hard enough. And then I love this idea too about, I think sometimes when I'm really hard on myself and I think, if my best friend called me right now and she told me about blah, 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 would I say all that to her? Oh, you're a loser. You didn't get it all done.
Right.
What were you thinking? Like, I would never say that to somebody I love or care about. So why am I saying it to myself?
Yeah, that self-talk can cause havoc on us. So be gentle with yourself, parents. thank you. Well, this has been delightful, Karina. Any kind of parting words that you would like to leave our parents with, and maybe some, I don't know, words of wisdom for those who are starting their journey into parenting, but also maybe in parallel, you know, what you were describing as a healing journey. Any words of wisdom and encouragement to help those listening?
Parenting is a remarkable journey, and it is just so selfless and something that is just revered. And it also comes with immense responsibility. And so I just want to again remind everyone listening that there is space for you to have grace and compassion for yourself and to show yourself some love and to take moments during the day to work on your own mental and emotional hygiene, because you will only show up for yourself and for everyone you love even brighter and more positive. And those relationships will evolve where they will, because you are showing up in a way that is so meaningful. And I would just encourage everyone to keep on that path of knowing who they are and really treasuring that.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Karina, for sharing your story and just sharing your wisdom. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Art of Parenting podcast. And if you did, please share it with your loved ones and make sure to leave a review so it can get heard by many more. And remember, if you've got a question, let me know. I'm here for you. Till next time.